Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. This year, the US Supreme Court is preparing to take up transgender rights for the first time in history, ruling on the question of whether transgender students are entitled to use bathrooms matching their gender identity. While this issue has only recently ignited a political firestorm across the country, transgender author Lee Schubert has dealt with an inner battle surrounding public restrooms and many other gender-related issues throughout her life. The author of Woman Incognito, Transsexual Without Transition, and a transsexual woman with a lifelong interest in both religion and politics, Lee Schubert, who prefers to be known as Transcender Lee, joins us tonight to share her journey and discuss why she has no desire to change her body to make it more female, what it means to really know who you are, and why she's on a mission to transcend boundaries of gender, race, religion, class, and sexual orientation. Lee Schubert, welcome.
Well, hello, Sandy. It's wonderful to be here with you this evening.
Oh, thank you for joining us, Lee. Lee, you say in your book, Woman Incognito, that you've taken two paths in your life. The first was a tortuous path to self-discovery. The second is the path you've been following since your mid-50s, when you realised you are a woman in a male body. Tell us a little bit about your journey through the early years to self-discovery.
Well, certainly. You know, a question that I suppose is asked most transgender people is, when did you first realize that your gender identity is different from the physical sex that you were born with? And although I can't give an exact answer to that, I have a strong feeling that at some point in early childhood, and I suppose I might be talking about 3 or 4 years of age, something like that, that I had a sense that I was really a girl, even though I was anatomically a boy. But I feel that it was pretty conveyed to me by probably everybody around me, my family, anyone else I had in contact with, that no, I could not be a girl. I was made a certain way, and that meant I was a boy, and there was really nothing more to talk about. And for a long time, I pretty much accepted that. I mean, little kid, who was I to argue with all these adults? At least... At that point, I would have had no support from society if I had argued. So I spent my childhood and adolescence trying to be what I was supposed to be, what people thought I was, a boy. And in my childhood, I wasn't all that different from a lot of typical boys. I had a lot of kind of boyish interests. I ran around the neighborhood with, you know, BB guns and shooting bows and arrows, and I liked knives and played various sports around the neighborhood and all of this kind of thing. I didn't really feel that I exactly fit in with other kids. I think I may have had a tendency to have more interest in playing with girls at an age when most boys aren't that interested in playing with girls. But basically, you know, there wasn't anything outstandingly sort of feminine about me, as far as I know. I did well in high school. I kind of focused on the academic side of high school. I was probably a bit of a nerd, not very adept socially, but I focused on something I was pretty good at. So I I did well in high school, and I went off to an Ivy League college expecting to do well there, but that's when I kind of lost my grip on things, and I entered something of a downward spiral and dropped in and out of college a few times and finally ended up in a mental hospital.
Now, before you went to college, you did have some very close relationships with girls. You had girlfriends. You say that you were at times in love with girls. And yet you say that in retrospect, you think that this strong affinity for female reflected both sexual attraction to them and emotional attraction to the idea of being a girl or woman. Now, that seems a little bit of a paradox, to have an emotional attraction to the idea of being a girl and also being sexually attracted to girls.
Well, I mean, we live in a day and age when people are pretty much aware that they're lesbians, which is frankly what I identify as at the present time. I mean, there are certainly girls who consider themselves to be absolutely girls and are glad to be girls, but are also attracted to other girls.
What do you think it was about college that triggered the downward spiral?
Gee, I think I still don't really know. Maybe to some extent the greater freedom. I had gone to a Catholic high school where, on some matters at least, and I don't mean this as a criticism, but on some matters, there were a lot of things you weren't really supposed to question, a lot of things you were supposed to take on faith. Certainly, in the religious environment I grew up in, there were very clear ideas about sex and gender. I remember, for some reason, a religion teacher I had as a senior was talking at one point about the psychology of men and women, and I doubt if his views would hold up too well in the modern psychological environment. But to him, the difference is, you know, men were men and women were women, and the twain met primarily to have babies, you know. So possibly when I got to college in an intellectually more liberal sort of situation, I may have been just sort of overwhelmed to some extent. Or maybe I had just, you know, held myself together being something, trying to be something that I'm not. As long as I could handle it. I'm not sure. But I dropped out of college three times in 2 or 3 years and got to the point where I just didn't know what else there was to try to do. The things I had tried weren't working out. And I finally decided that professional help in a mental institution was perhaps my best chance of getting my life back together.
Did you at that point believe that you were a woman? Or were you not sure what was going on?
Okay. Shortly before I got to the point where I decided the best thing to do is go into mental hospital, I remember very clearly one of my sessions with the first psychiatrist I had seen. And I remember in one of the sessions, I said something to the effect that I really felt as though I was really a woman. And he looks at me and he says, "Well, you look like a man." And I said, "Well, yes, of course, physically. But psychologically, I feel that I'm a woman." And as I recall, he said, "Well, do you think there's a difference?" And I'm not even sure how I responded. I probably said I thought there was. But in any event, he just left the issue laying there on the table. Now, not very many mental health professionals would do that now. They would explore the issue. They would try to find out what I meant by saying I felt that I was a woman. They considered it an important thing to look into. He didn't. He just left it there. I have to say that I understand now that at this time in the early 1960s, anything like the modern understanding of gender was just in its utter infancy. It was a field that even mental health professionals, most of them, knew hardly anything about. So I cannot criticize that particular psychiatrist. I can only say that I brought up an issue a few decades before the mental health field was really ready to know what to do about it.
And yet you went on to get married after that.
Why did
you get married if you really felt that you were a woman?
Okay. At that point, I did not really feel that way. There were a couple of periods in my life. One, as I said, in very early childhood, where I think I had the feeling I was a girl. And again, I did specifically bring that up to the first psychiatrist I ever talked to. I was in a mental hospital, one that was highly, highly respected, and the doctors there also had no clue about what is now called gender dysphoria. And so I went back to accepting what all these, these well-qualified doctors assumed, which was, well, I'm
Lee,
really
I'm just going to hold you there. We'll come back to this after the break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with author Lee Schubert about her book, Woman Incognito, Transsexual Without Transition. We'll be back with more after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Lee Schubert, before the break, we were talking about your first marriage. How easy was it for you to be married, to be a husband?
Well, I would say it pretty much sat pretty well with me. I think that actually before the break, you brought up the question as to, if I thought I was a woman, why would I have gotten married to a woman? And again, I think the point here is simply that I have always been attracted to women. And interestingly enough, most transgender people do not change what sex they're attracted to because they come to realize that they're transgender. Usually someone who seemed to be straight before recognizing him or herself as transgender, turns out to be gay in his or her true gender identity, and vice versa. So in that respect, it's really not unusual that at all points in my life, no matter how I viewed my gender identity, I was attracted to the same sex, namely to women. And I was glad to be married. I can't say there was anything about it that felt especially uncomfortable. My relationship with my first wife did not work, but as she herself expressed it, and I think I talk about this in my book, Woman Incognito, as she herself expressed it sometime after we split up, it could not have worked simply because our values were too different. What we wanted out of life, what we considered important or not important, were just very different. And, you know, this happens sometimes in marriages, and it did in ours. But basically, the idea of being married to a woman and having children, these are things I wanted and things I continued to want. After our marriage fell apart, I continued to want them and did find another woman and married, had more children, and in 38 years of this marriage, I have been very happy to be, I don't mind saying a husband, you know, whatever, to be a spouse of another woman, and to have children.
Now, you've been married now for the second time, as you said, for 30 more or more years. At what point did you know definitively, was that decision made, yes, I am definitely a woman? In a male body. Yeah. And when did you first come out, as it were, and tell your wife and your children?
Yes. I was in somewhere around my mid-50s, which, interestingly enough, is fairly typical, or at least common, among people of my generation. A lot of male-to-female transgender people did not really recognize that that's how they view themselves, as women in male bodies, until sometime during their 50s. And at first, I didn't realize exactly what it was. I realized that I had some real discomfort about the idea of being a man, that it didn't seem to fit very well. And this was right around when the internet was really coming on stream. And that was a great boon to many transgender people, because suddenly there's a lot of information literally at our fingertips. And not only that, but it was possible to actually get into contact on the internet with other people who were struggling with their gender identity. And I found out that there's this thing called gender dysphoria, which is basically the distress and sometimes really agony that can come from a disconnect between the gender you feel you belong in and your physical sex. And I had not been in psychotherapy for quite a long time, but I decided it was time to go back, because for one thing, I had become quite depressed, more depressed than I'd been for a long time. And so I went back into therapy, found a very, very good woman psychiatrist, and the first day, the first session, and she asked me, you know, what's going on? Why are you here? And I said, well, I have gender dysphoria. And I realized that much. I didn't at that point quite identify as being a woman. At that point, I still didn't really feel that was possible. I wished I was one. As a matter of fact, another thing I said to her, I think that first session, was I said, I hate being a man. And she said, well, do you actually hate being a man, or do you wish you were a woman? And I said, well, yes, I wish I was a woman. That's why I hate being a man. And we went on from there. And after a while, I don't know exactly how long, I came to realize, okay. And, of course, I learned more about this whole subject, and I came to realize, okay, I actually am a woman. This is, I believe, my true gender, in spite of the fact that I was born in a male body.
So how did your wife and your four children and your brothers react?
Yeah, well, I was extremely fortunate, and much more so than many transgender people, and for which I am eternally grateful. My wife certainly was surprised at first and didn't know what to make of it at the beginning, which I totally understand. I mean, it's not what you expect to hear from your spouse. But as she has described it, before too long, she started realizing that I was the same person, that she had fallen in love with and married and had children with, and that although she couldn't exactly understand why I suddenly was saying I considered myself a woman, that, you know, our relationship was still basically the same, and she was able to accept it. This often does not work out. Often one spouse discovering that he or she is transgender foretells the end of the marriage. Many such marriages end in divorce. Fortunately, my wife was able to accept me as I am and understand it as well as she can. And, you know, I sometimes say, well, I can't really expect people to fully understand what this is about because I don't fully understand it and I'm living it. But
she accepted me totally
and understood it as well as she could.
You're rare among transgender individuals in that you have no desire to take hormones or undergo surgery, and you don't really attempt to pass yourself off as a woman. So does that not confuse people? How do people in the LGBT community respond when they hear this?
You know, mostly with interest and curiosity. I sort of wondered about that. You know, I wondered, am I going to be rejected? A lot of trans people are going to say, well, you're not really trans. No one has said that to my face. I can't tell you what people think. I can't read minds. But what I have got much more than that, such as when I was at the Philadelphia Trans Health Conference, huge conference, attracts 3,000 or more people every year in Philadelphia. And I was there. I was selling my book and telling people about my story and my experiences. And the main reaction I got was, well, this is really interesting. This is something I haven't heard about before. You know, I want to try to understand this better. And, you know, it's interesting. You said that I was very unusual as a trans person, in that I'm not interested in what's called transition in any form, whether just dressing and trying to appear like a woman or changing my body to some extent by hormones or changing it more by surgery. You know, you said this makes me very unusual, and it certainly may, But I honestly don't know just how unusual it makes me, because you just, even I, just don't hear much about transgender people who have not transitioned to some extent. And, I mean, number one, I doubt if I'm unique. That would be surprising. So there are probably others who feel the way I do. A few people have said to me, you know, that's sort of the way I feel. And so I don't know how many of us there are. But I'm sure, as I say, I'm sure I'm not the only one. And I'm trying to, you know, help people simply be aware that for some transgender people, non-transition may be a viable option.
So are you saying then that it was enough for you to simply admit to yourself and tell the people that you cared about, I'm a woman in a male body? That was enough. You didn't need to do anything else to feel that you were a woman.
I am saying that. You know, it's interesting. Somebody asked me fairly early in my exploration of this whole issue if I felt like I was a woman trapped in a man's body, because that's sort of a classic description. I don't think as many transgender people necessarily say that as they did at one time. But at one time, it was sort of a classic thing to say that you're a woman trapped in a man's body. And when someone asked me that, I said, well, actually, I'd have to say I don't feel that way, because I don't feel trapped. You know, I don't feel that having the body I have is some kind of trap. And so many trans people certainly do feel that they were born in the wrong body. And
we're
going to
hold it
there.
We'll be back shortly and we'll wrap this conversation up then. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer and I'm speaking with author Lee Schubert about her book, Woman Incognito, and her mission to help people understand the full range of possibilities within the gender spectrum. We'll be back after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I found a toy dinosaur over on the playground by Smith Street. It had this phone number on it, and, well, I just wanted to make sure the dinosaur made it back to its little owner.
When I found the little sippy cup, I just had to give you a call. It's for a kid, you know?
I know my son gets super attached to the smallest things, even a fire truck, and I'd be happy to drop it off.
We'd do anything for kids, yet 1 in 6 children in the U.S. struggle with hunger. Help end childhood hunger near you. Learn how at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Lee Schubert, one constant theme, both on your path to self-discovery and on your path since then as a self-identified woman, has been your attraction to religion and spirituality. In fact, you say that you see your whole life as preparation for a transcending interfaith ministry focusing on transgender issues. Tell us more about that.
Well, yes, I really do think of it that way. Religion and spirituality were always important to me. I mentioned growing up Catholic. I mentioned going to Catholic high school and when I was there, I actually felt called to the priesthood and actually applied to a Jesuit seminary. I ended up not going to a Jesuit seminary, but going off to a regular college instead. And, you know, I might mention that the way I made that decision, the reason I made that decision not to go to a seminary was, of course, in the Catholic denomination, part of being a member of the clergy is never getting married. And I did have a girlfriend at the time, whom I did love. And although I thought I was prepared to give that aspect of life up, actually, when I went to her senior farm with her, and this was in another state, so I traveled down there and went to her with her senior farm, I realized just sort of all of a sudden, someday I'm going to want to get married. And I was realistic enough to know that most likely I would not marry my high school sweetheart. That doesn't usually happen. But that someday I would want to get married. And that really, really caused me not to go into the priesthood. But still, the idea of something spiritual in life remained with me. And it remained with me even through about 15 years of agnosticism. I always had a draw back to religion. I always found myself sort of hanging around one sort of religious group or another, even when I thought I didn't believe. Well, now I realize what I didn't believe was perhaps some orthodox and traditional ideas about God and religion and spirituality. And I realize now that there are other approaches to spirituality rather than the traditional approach that I rejected at one time in my life.
You raise the question in your book of whether there's such a thing as a distinctively transgender spirituality or theology. What is your conclusion?
I don't think there is, in the sense that, you know, if you're transgender, then this is what your religion should be, or this is what your approach to spirituality should be. I don't feel that way. I mean, for one thing, I just know for a fact now that transgender people are involved in all sorts of religious approaches. I mean, virtually anything you could name. I've met transgender Roman Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Muslims. For some reason, a good many transgender people seem to be attracted to Wicca and other perhaps earth-based or goddess-based spiritualities. The only idea I've come up with for myself, and which I would encourage other transgender people to look at, is the idea of a very interfaith approach. And this sort of gets into something you mentioned at the beginning, which is I've become interested in the idea of transcending boundaries of various different types. I had to transcend boundaries of gender just to figure out how to be myself. And then I started realizing, well, many of our lives are sort of unnecessarily circumscribed by other boundaries, boundaries of race, religion, class, sexual orientation, to mention some of the main ones. And so I've developed kind of this attitude that since we are people, as transgender individuals, who have already found a way to transcend traditional boundaries of what it's supposed to be a man, or what it's supposed to be a woman, perhaps a somewhat logical approach to spirituality for us to at least take a look at would be the idea of transcending the sort of the fragmentation of religion, of transcending the idea that, well, you have to be a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew or a Hindu or a Buddhist or. You know, maybe you don't. Maybe just as gender doesn't have to be as confined to particular parameters as people used to think. Maybe religion and spirituality doesn't have to be as confined within traditional parameters. You know, something that I think about sometimes is I used to hear people say, and this is in my Christian background, I used to hear people say, well, you know, you've got to believe everything in the Bible. You can't just pick and choose what you believe and what you don't believe. Well, at some point, I found myself asking myself, why? I mean, exactly why is that? And talking not just about the Bible, in other words, the scripture of one particular religion, looking at so many fantastic, rich scriptural traditions, you know, Bible, the Talmud, certainly the Quran, an incredibly rich piece of religious literature, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, the sutras, you know, all of these rich spiritual documents. Why can't you pick and choose? Why can't you look at it all and try to see what parts, what ideas from all of these different spiritual sources seem to make sense to me, and in what pattern could I possibly put together certain elements from several different religions and come up with something that is perhaps more relevant to my own life than any one package, you know, that you can take off a certain shelf.
Let's talk about God, because you say that a question that would seem relevant to most transgender people is, what gender is God? Is God mm-hmm. male or female, both or neither? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Say more about that.
Yeah, sure. I used to wonder about that. You know, growing up as a Catholic, I accepted the sort of image of God as male. Certainly the Old Testament God seems to be a definite patriarchal figure, and the Catholic doctrine is God became incarnate as a male. And so I accepted pretty much that idea of thinking of God as a male. And then later on, as I became really somewhat feminist in my views, and this was even before I viewed myself as transgender, I started thinking, as a lot of people do, that, you know, God is a male, and you can't think of God as a particular gender. You know, God really probably doesn't have a gender. Then, later on, as I came to pretty strongly think of myself as female, I started realizing that, you know, not saying that God is a woman, you know, I mean, again, God probably doesn't have a particular gender, but that still, I personally can relate better to the concept of God, thinking of God as female. And then at some point I thought, whoa, baby, does that mean that all these people who are more comfortable thinking of God as male have just as much right to do that as I have to think of God as female? And I, you know, there's only one answer possible for me, which was, well, yes, they really do. In other words, you have to relate to God as a human being, because we are human beings. And part of being human. For most of us, and these days not everyone, but for most of us, part of being human is thinking of yourself as one gender or another. And so we all have to be somewhat anthropomorphic in our own sense of God and attempt to have a relationship with God. So now I really think it's perfectly okay to think of God as male or as female or as both or as neither or maybe as something else that we haven't even heard about. Because we're never going to have a perfect, total understanding of God, or if we do, it will be when we've reached some different plane of consciousness than the one we're on now.
You know, you're an ordained minister now. You talk about, in your book, about what your ministry, interfaith ministry, might be like. You're very keen on, let's say, transcending, as you suggested, you know, the stereotypes, the cultural conditioning that society imposes upon us. We're talking about gender, class, religion, race, sexual orientation, and age. Do you think it is really possible to transcend those stereotypes? They've been around a very long time. And what would happen if we did?
Well, first of all, yes, I think it's helpful. Now, there are a couple of different ways to think about it. I think it can be very helpful as an individual, simply because I think that these barriers that arise from stereotypes limit many of us from reaching our full potential of one type or another. I mean, I'm certainly of an age where I thought that if a woman was going to work, that meant she was going to be if she went to college, it meant she was going to be a teacher or a nurse, and if she didn't, it meant she was going to be a secretary. Now, I think that, at least in this country, I think most people now except that there's no reason why a woman should be confined to so few possible occupations just because she's a woman.
Hold that thought. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with Lee Schubert, author of the book Woman Incognito, Transsexual Without Transition. We'll continue this conversation after the break.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hi everyone, this is Shay Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shay Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Lee Schubert, your book, Woman Incognita, raises some very interesting questions. And of course, it's impossible to go into all of them in the short time we have left. But one thing I think is really important to address are the topics covered in your final chapter, Things I Wish My Parents Had Known. I mean, this is designed to help parents get started on the challenging and exciting experience, as you describe it, of raising children who are part of a major shift in our society's gender paradigm. We are seeing more and more children feel safer to come out and talk about the way they see themselves. What advice do you give to parents who have a child maybe going through puberty, a young teen, who is unsure about their sexuality, their gender, etc.?
Sure. Well, if I may, I'd like to point out that nowadays this issue often comes up at an even earlier age than that, often before puberty. And at whatever age it comes up, especially if it comes up younger, there's a tendency to think, well, you know, this is a stage that's going to pass. And sometimes it is. The fact that a young child wants to try dressing up in, say, in his sister's clothes or trying out makeup or something, that may happen a few times, and it may indeed be something that will pass. But if it becomes a persisting pattern, and especially if a child, you know, whether puberty, teenager, or younger, you know, really explicitly says, Mom or Dad, I'm really a girl, and you know, and I'm talking about a child who appears to be a boy. I'm really a girl, or it happens the other way around. You know, the person you thought was your daughter says, I'm a boy. You know, you got to take it seriously. And there are a number of things you have to do. The first thing is you have to somehow get over your own natural resistance to this, because it's not what you had in mind. And I know it's not what you had in mind. And I know it's a shock. And I know you may have had a whole lot of ideas about your child's future, but suddenly look like they're going to be very different. If the child wasn't even the gender you always thought, you just got to realize that what really matters is your son or your daughter. Let me tell you about an experience I know about personally. I know about someone who's a parent daughter turned out to be a transgender boy. And if he was asked, if the father was asked, how do you feel about that? He would say, look, I used to have an unhappy daughter. Now I have a happy son. How would anybody feel about it? I'm glad that my child is happy now. And, you know, so I ask all parents, you know, remember that the bottom line is your child's happiness. And that isn't going to be fostered by insisting that he or she try to be something that he or she just doesn't feel is in her nature to be. The most important single determinant of whether a transgender child is going to grow up to be a healthy and happy person is the love and acceptance that he or she receives in her own home from her own family. And then, at a certain age, and if we're talking about a child in puberty or a teenager, we're already at that age, the person's also got interface with the rest of the world, especially with schools. And there are real challenges presented to a transgender child at school. Everything from getting people to use the name that the child wants to use now, to use the correct pronouns, to refer to a transgender girl as she, a transgender boy as he, everything from those very basic things to the issues which are big political issues right now, which bathroom is a trans boy or trans girl expected to use. There are issues about what sports team, you know, can this individual play on. It's very complicated, and your child will need you as an advocate. You've got to be the adult who's willing to face school officials, teachers, administrators. Maybe you'll even have to face the school board and stand up for your child's right to be treated the same way as any other member of his or her gender. In other words, for your transgender daughter to be treated like any other girl in school, or your transgender son to be treated like any other boy in school.
You write that trans children need total acceptance of who they really are, unconditional love, and a sense of security. Well, that's a fundamental truth about all of us. I mean, regardless of gender, sexual orientation, religion, class, creed, we all need to be accepted for who we are, to have a sense of security, and to be loved unconditionally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're not really talking about any classification here. We are talking about the fundamental needs of human beings.
Well, that's right. You know, it's really true. And unfortunately, for some parents, because of, you know, the cultural values they themselves have grown up with, this idea of their daughter suddenly saying, no, I'm your son, or vice versa, it's just a real culture shock. And I totally get it. I totally understand. And you know what? You're going to be suffering a loss to some extent. I have actually heard people say the parent of a transgender child, let's say of the person they thought was a daughter, discovers really their son, just in some way, to some extent, they're really going to have to mourn the loss of that daughter they thought they had. You know, you can't just say, you know, don't worry about it, no big deal. It's a very big deal. Of course it's a very big deal. You're going to have to accept both the part of you that wishes this wasn't happening, that wishes your family could just, you know, go along the more normal route that other families go on. You're going to have to understand and accept that part of yourself while at the same time accepting that your child needs to be what your child needs to be. And there are support groups.
So really, what we're being challenged with here, and it's not just, you know, with the transgender community, it's with everything, is can we love beyond our insecurities, our conditioning, our upbringings, our stereotyping? Can we love beyond that? Can we love people who have a different religion from us? Can we love the old? Can we love people who are different, who express themselves differently than us? That's it in a nutshell, isn't it?
Well, I think it really is, and I think that's why this idea of transcending traditional gender stereotypes led me to go beyond that and think about transcending all these other types of boundaries, because it really does all have that single common denominator, which is accepting and loving our fellow human beings for who they are, not because they're different from us.
And that is a beautiful note on which to end this show. I wish we had more time to go into this deeper, but I'm afraid we don't. Lee Schubert, thank you very much for writing your book. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you so much. I've greatly enjoyed this opportunity.
Thank you, Lee. You can find more information about Lee Schubert and her book, Woman Incognito, Transsexual Without Transition, at her website, Transcender, TRANSCENDER, Lee, .com. And the book is full of resources for anybody who is facing issues and needs some guidance, help, assistance, support. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You've been listening to What Is Going On. I hope you'll join me again next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.